You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is very unique, where he shares the message of the gospel unlike anyone else. It's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. Whether you find yourself in a good place, maybe in a difficult place, or possibly even in a very lonely place, let me encourage you that you've come to the right place. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
It's interesting during the holidays, if you've got a wife like I've got, oh, this is kind of year-round in my house, but I think either she just likes to cook, or maybe she thinks that like any second, like a busload of people's going to drive up and we're going to have to feed them. But when she makes chili, she makes chili. You know what I'm saying? If she makes stroganoff, she makes stroganoff. And it's usually in big pots. Maybe we should buy smaller pots and try to restrain her a little bit. But I mean, when she makes chili, there's chili. And that chili you eat, and you eat all you can, but you know that it's going in the refrigerator, and you're probably going to see that chili again. Because it's leftovers. Now, I'm not saying it's not bad, because a lot of times leftovers are what? They get better that second time around. But let me tell you something about leftovers. About the third, fourth, fifth time around, the leftovers, you've got them at home right now probably, and you'll probably be eating them and making soup and all kind of concoctions over the next few days, and they're okay, but it's not the thing that you serve somebody the first time around. I mean, if you're trying to impress a guy that you can cook and you invite him over to your house for dinner one night, you don't just go in the refrigerator and go, oh, I didn't have time today, here's some soup from Thursday, we're just going to warm this up, and you know, how does he know you even made that? You could have bought it somewhere and then just grown your own stuff in it at home. You don't try to impress somebody with leftovers. But there are a lot of people who have this mentality with God. And they say, okay, God, you know what? I got the good stuff and I'm young and this stuff's going on. It's great stuff going on. And it's really about me. And when I get down to the end of the road, then maybe we'll have some leftovers for you. And maybe you can have what's left, but right now it's about me, it's about my life, it's about my agenda, it's about my career, it's about my job. It's just basically about me. And I'm not against you, God. I'm not thinking you're bad, and I think you probably got a plan that it probably would work, but we're gonna work my plan right now. We're gonna work my agenda. We're gonna work my goals right now. And I'm expecting you to bless all this, by the way. But it's really about me. And we'll get to you later. After we've had our partying time, our chasing the men or women as the case may be time, after we've done everything I want to do, then whatever's left over in my life, you can have. And you say, well, nobody does that. Nobody consciously does that. Let me tell you something. It happens every day. You say, well, how do you know if you're doing that? Because you're making decisions every day when you wake up to say, God, this is either my day or your day. It's either my life or it's your life. You say, well, Richard, aren't you supposed to be good at your job? Aren't you supposed to do good work and work hard? You know, there's a difference in working to make a living and working just to get rich, just to accumulate things, where you don't own the stuff you get, it owns you. And I think everybody knows where this fine line is, but it's hard to jump off the boat. It's hard to get off that ride because there's so much pressure. There's so many people around who will do anything. I saw a commercial watching the news on CNN. There's a guy that's sitting at a desk and he's got his phone to his ear. He's probably in his 50s. And people come by dropping mail off, and he's on his phone, and they say, how are you, Bob? Fine. And he walks off. He doesn't say anything. They keep walking in, walking out. It turns out the guy is dead. He's been sitting there for days, and nobody knew he was dead. You know, wow, that guy's great. He's in early. He's the first guy in. He's the last guy out. And you're giving your whole life to some job. My little brother worked for a company when he got out of college. Managed a big portfolio, and I mean, I'm telling you, all but bringing cots into the office. They were there night and day, from early morning to late night. And you know what the philosophy was? If you don't like the job and you don't want to do it, leave. We got people lined up to take your place. And that's exactly what happens. You quit, and you know what? They replace you. And your gifts and your abilities and all that special that was you, it's somebody else has got all that, and then they're in your slot. Now, I want you to turn to a guy by the name of Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes. And not to give you too much background on this guy, but he was the wisest guy. In fact, he's a guy that when God said, yeah, I'll give you anything you want, he was King David's son, Solomon. He said, I'll give you anything you want. And he said, I want wisdom. And because of wisdom, and he had wisdom, but he made some mistakes even with wisdom. He asked for wisdom, he got that. Then God blessed him. He was the richest guy probably that ever lived. But he writes this book, and some people think this is a very depressing book, and when you read it, it kind of lays out the truth. It doesn't mean there's no hope beyond this, but he spells out the reality of life and why it is best to give God your best up front instead of the leftovers. And I want to start in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 with verse 1, but he says, "The words of the preacher," and he calls himself the preacher in this, "the son of David, king in Jerusalem." He says, "Vanity of vanities," and this word means absurdity, frustration, futility, nonsense, worthless. It doesn't work. "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher. "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." It's all absurdity, frustration. "What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. People come and go. The sun also rises. The sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns toward the north. Life goes on. The earth keeps spinning. Sun goes up and down. All these things happen. But what man does, what we do in this life," he says, "it's just vanity." Flip over to chapter 2. Now, he tells a little bit about his early life and what he's tried, and he spells out what most people, not everybody, but a lot of people hit one or two or all of these things. Chapter 2, "I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with myrrh or with pleasure. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity." This guy literally set out, and there are people that are listening to me today, there are people in this city all over the planet, and they literally say, "I'm going to chase pleasure." And they're going to find whatever they can do. If it's sex, they're going to go whole hog and just chase men, women, both, whatever it takes. And pleasure is the ideal. It's to do whatever I can to bring pleasure to myself. And they say, well, that runs out. Maybe it's drugs. You start smoking a little weed, a little pot, and that gives you a great buzz and, you know, a little high. And you think, wow, you know, this feels good, but it doesn't feel like it did when I started. I need a little more. Somebody says, well, try some Coke, not Coca-Cola. Cocaine. And so you get a little cocaine. So, oh, I would never do that. But so, oh, I'll take a test. And you taste it. Next thing you know, you're snorting it. Next thing you know, somebody says, well, try a little heroin. You think, well, I'm never going to smoke pot. I'm never going to do crack cocaine. And then you look up and there's these normal people all around us who are doing drugs. And either nobody knows it or the people who are doing it have no idea it would end up there. And what are they pursuing? They're pursuing some kind of pleasure to relieve the pain, something that would bring some pleasure, even if it's temporary, into your life. You know anybody like that? We're surrounded with people like this. And Solomon says, I decided to go after pleasure, anything that would bring me pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. Verse 2, I said of laughter, madness, and of myrrh, what does it accomplish? And you say, well, then is there something wrong with having a good time? Not if it's really a good time. There are a lot of people call a good time. It's not a good time. It's a bad time, disguised in some kind of goodness. But he says of laughter, it was madness. It doesn't work because you go home from a great party. You know what? You're just right back where you started. You can't keep that thing going. There's got to be something beyond even that. Verse 3, I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. He said, I even tried wine. So he's trying everything. Verse 4, if that didn't work, you say, okay, I'm not into that. Well, here's your deal then. Verse 4 maybe. I made my works great. I went to work. I tried to build things. I built myself, not a house, houses, and planted myself vineyards. He was into construction and wanted homes and all these vineyards, properties. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. You know, you start planting trees, now you got to water them. So he's got aqueduct systems. Verse 7, he's got all this land, all this stuff. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. I have so many servants, they're marrying each other and having kids. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. He says in verse 8, I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers. He hired entertainers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Now listen to him in verse 10. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. Imagine having a black American Express card with no limit. And everywhere you go, anything you see, anything you even hear of, you say, I want that. Send that to my house. I want that. Or one of my houses. You got to figure out where you're sending this stuff at some point. He says, whatever my eyes desired, I didn't keep it from them. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. So what are you supposed to do? You go out there and work, you work hard. You're not supposed to work that hard because now it looks like you're living to work, not just working to live. What are you supposed to do? Are you not supposed to do a good job? I'll give you a verse about that in a minute. He says all this pursuit for the wrong reason, trying to find pleasure, trying to find joy and satisfaction in what you do and what you have and where you go, all these things the world says work, it just doesn't work. And I could go seat to seat in this room alone who have tried it this way. And a lot of times you talk to a 50, 60, 70-year-old person who's done it the wrong way, and you know what? They're scrambling, if they're even trying at all, and saying, God, I don't want to leave you the leftovers, but that's all I've got. I've took my life that belonged to you, and I've done what I wanted to do with it, and now all I've got is the leftovers. And you talk about people with passion, if they ever turn it around, and they ever make a decision to say, God, I don't have long, but what I've got is yours, they maximize and will accomplish sometimes in 10, 20 years what some people in a lifetime never accomplish, and allow God to live in them and through them. Now, that's great, but don't end up that way, guys. Don't wait till you're 60 or 70 year old to figure this thing out. Do it at 20, do it at 30, do it at 40 something and say, God, what am I doing? There's a guy in this room right now that I've known for a few years, and at a certain point, he quit his job. He was on this fast track, working for a big corporation, basically, making the money, traveling, doing all these things. You know what? He quit. Everybody thought he'd lost his mind. I was worried about him a few days there myself. But he quit. He had saved up enough money to do what? To stop and think and reassess and say, what am I doing with my life in his 30s? Now, he's gone back to work, but let me tell you something. He's not going to give his heart and his soul and his life to some company, I don't think. I think he slowed down and stopped long enough to reassess and say, it's not about that. It's not worth that. It ain't going to matter in 20 or 30 years. They're not going to remember anyway who I was or what I did. Get some balance in your life and find out what God wants you to do and give him your strength. Give him your life. Don't give him the leftovers. Some people say, well, Solomon had to go through all that and find out on his own. I may have to do the same thing. You don't have to do it that way. Wisdom says I can learn from somebody else and somebody else's mistakes. All right, look at Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and let's start with verse 9. He says, rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Verse 12, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come. Now look how he gives this progression. He says, guys, do it now. Do it while you're young. Don't wait. He says, remember now your Creator when you're young, before the difficult days come, and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble, he starts talking about old age here, and the strong men bow down, when the grinders cease because they are few, people start dying off, and those that look through the windows grow dim, when the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird, anything will wake you up in the night, and all the daughters of music are brought low. Also, they are afraid of height and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden. You're so weak, you can't even pick a grasshopper up. And desire fails, for man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Verse 6, remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, things that symbolize death when someone dies. Or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. And then the last few verses, verse 13 and 14 of that chapter 12. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter, Solomon says. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all, for God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Fear God and keep his commandments. Now let me read you something out of Proverbs chapter 23, verse 4 says this, do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. Don't work to be rich. Work, but don't work just to get rich. If that's how God blesses you, great, but don't give your whole life just trying to be rich. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says this, "Therefore, whether you eat or drink." Now guys, by the way, this is the ultimate purpose for any believer. People say, what is the ultimate goal for your life as a Christian? What does God want for you? What is the ultimate purpose? Here it is. "Therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all" what? "To the glory of God." Now you wake up tomorrow morning, it's time to go to work, and you say, "Father, I'll do whatever you want me to do. If you want me to quit my job today and you got a plan, some kind of full-time ministry, I'm into that. Wherever you want me to go, whatever you want me to do, if you want me to quit this job because you're transferring me somewhere else or I lose this job, I trust you, God, because I realize my life is not about money, it's not about stuff, it's about people." There's somebody in this room right now, I got a call from a guy, it's somebody that works in a mall. A girl in our church handed him a card on her job and said, "You know what, if you're looking for a church, come to this church." And the guy called, left a message, wanted to know what time, where, wanted more information. I talked to him on my way home, and he may be here for all I know today. You know what? That person is on that job. Sure, she's making a living. Sure, she's out there providing maybe for her family. But what has God got you out there in your job for? It's not just to make a buck. It's to do ministry. It's to reach out to people who are around you that are not going to get it any other way. And some of you say, "Well, I'm really blessed. I work in an all-Christian company." But you know what? Maybe you need to get strong and get transferred out there, you know, into some pagan territory where there's some people that need some help. You're there to make a living, guys, but you're there to live, not just make a living. You're there to help other people see that there's more to life than just living and dying and trying to make it through the day, as the song says. Not just surviving, existing, but really living. And if they see you, I'll tell you, one of the best ways to model this is to model it. You say, "Well, if I don't go to work first and leave last, I'll lose my job." You know what? Lose it. They're going to kill you doing it anyway. You say, "That's easy for you to say. You don't have my family to feed." You know what? You don't have your family to feed either. That's God's problem. But if you kill the body he's using to feed your family, he's going to have a hard time feeding it. And I've got boundaries. You know, a pastor's job can be 24/7. A few months back, I was laying in the bed. I don't give people my number and say, "Call me anytime, day or night. If you're dying, I'll come help you. If you're dead, it can wait because you're gone anyway." You know, I had somebody call me at the house one night, 10:30. I'm laying in the bed reading to my girls. Said, "What's going on?" I said, "I'm laying here in the bed reading to my girls. This is an emergency. I'll be glad to talk to you. If not, I'll talk to you tomorrow." And he said, "Well, it's not an emergency." I said, "I'll talk to you tomorrow." And I hung up. You say, "Well, that's cold-blooded. You ought to be more compassionate." No, I got a family. I've got a life. I've got little girls that won't understand one day that I had time for everybody in the world, but not for them. You've got kids, you know what? It happens every day. It's going on in this room. Moms and dads who mean well, but who give their lives to a company to make money, to buy things for kids that grow up and run away and never talk to them because they didn't want that stuff. They wanted dad. They wanted mom. They wanted somebody to love them. And at some point, you got to say no. I've talked to people who've made career changes and adjusted everything, moved to entirely different cities. A man, I think of one right now, his kid got in trouble in a town with drugs and alcohol, stuff like that, getting into all kind of trouble. He left his job, his career, picked the whole family up, moved to an entirely different city to save his family, to save his kid, because he cared about his family. You say, "But what about his career?" I say, no, what about his kid? You're making decisions every day. I'm making decisions every day. You say, "But I've got to eat." You know what? It doesn't take that much to eat. A lot of our pursuit is about riches. It's about excess. It's about extras. It's about buying stuff that we don't need anyway. You say, "Well, I'm in debt. I've got to work two jobs." All right, let's get some balance, get you out of debt. And then let's move forward with some balance, with a life. There is a life to be lived out there, not an existence that you work for some company and give your whole life to them. If you're going to give your life to something, give it to Jesus. Because you know what? When I'm dead and gone, these companies, we've manufactured things, my wife and I, you know what? Nobody knows or cares. It's over. There's new lines that come out, new product, new salespeople, new stuff. They don't care about what we did anymore. But there's a place where you lay up treasure where somebody cares and it lasts forever. It's heaven. It's Jesus. And there is joy. When the party's over, there's joy. When nobody's watching, there's fulfillment, there's satisfaction. It works. You say, "But I'm not rich. Everybody else is running off and leaving me." They're getting ahead. Ahead on where? Where are they going? They don't even know where they're going. In a hurry to get nowhere and do nothing. Therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it to the glory of God. You wake up tomorrow and say, God, this day is yours. I'm going to my job. I'm going to work hard, but I'm not giving them my life. You are my life and you have my life. Use me here today. And if you want me here, great. If you don't, great. I'm going to take a stand. I'm not going to be obnoxious. I'm not going to be rude, but I'm going to speak the truth in love and I'm going to allow you to live in me and through me no matter what the cost. Use me. Don't let this day, the only, maybe the last day of my life, be a waste. Let me give you one more verse to employees so you won't think this is not in the Bible. Colossians 3, 22 to 24. Bondservants, or basically employees, you could say, obey in all things your masters, your employers, according to the flesh, not with eye service, not just while they're watching, as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God ultimately. 23. For whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. You don't work for your employer anyway. You work for God. Don't go to working hard when somebody's watching you. Your boss is always watching you. Verse 24, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. You know, the great satisfaction of working is not getting a check and going home and go, wow, look what I got. It's going home going, God is pleased with who I am and what I've done, and my life is making a difference in the people that I work around, that I live around. Give God your best. You say, how do I do that? You just do it. You say, God, enough's enough. I'm not going to use my whole day, my whole life mapped out just for work. I'm going to start budgeting and blocking out time where I have nothing to do but ministry if that's what you want me to do. If it's going out on a street corner, if it's feeding homeless people, you make time, you make a night. You know what? And the more time you make, the more time you're going to want to make. My mentor started out and said, God, give me time to give my life to people. And he was in the piano business. And pretty soon he was spending, it was started out 90% of his time was work and 10% ministry. And you know where it is now? It's 90% ministry and 10% work. He set a goal. He said, God, I don't want to use the only life I've got, giving it to somebody else that doesn't care anyway. It isn't going to matter. Now, guys, I'm not saying don't go to work tomorrow. Don't show up at the church office going, well, I quit my job. Here I am, you know. I'm telling you to go to work tomorrow and work wisely, work smart, but know when to go, know when to go home, know when to put some balance in the thing and say, God, it's all your time anyway, but God, make sure you leave some time in this process for my life, not to give you what's left over. There's a great story I heard years ago about a little old lady on a street and this little girl down the street, and they knew each other, and the little girl would come by and the lady would talk to this girl and say, you know, you ought to give your life to Jesus. You ought to plan your life and do what he wants you to do. And she says, you know, well, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do all this stuff and then I'm going to give you my life. And she kept saying that. And one day the lady had a box of roses, dead roses, delivered to her house. Nicely arranged, all in a bow, nice, beautiful box. Delivered it, a little card from the old lady. The girl got these roses, went running down to the old lady's house, said, what are you doing sending me dead roses? And the lady said, you know, I wanted you to see what it is you're sending God one day, because you're going to give him what's left over from your life. Don't send him dead roses. Give him what you are, what you have now, up front. Don't wait till the end. Don't give him the leftovers, because he deserves more than that.
Richard Ellis will return in a moment to wrap up today's talk with a few final words. But first, I want to share some important information about the program. The reason we do this is to share with you the good news. When you open your heart and life to the saving grace of Jesus Christ, that's the beginning point of the most amazing journey you'll ever experience. But it's also a journey that we want to join with you. So if you've been on this road for a while or just getting started, let us know how we can help. Maybe you've got some questions, stuck in neutral, or even wondering how to take the next breath. We're here. Give us a call at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also connect with us through our website, richardellistalks.com. We're here to celebrate with you too. So if this program has made a difference to you and encouraged you in any way, tell us about it. Let's keep this conversation going by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also send us an email through our website, richardellistalks.com. That would really make our day to know how Richard's talks have helped you. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or email us through the website, richardellistalks.com. And speaking of the messages, you can find today's talk along with every message from Richard at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we really believe that these talks with Richard are making a difference in your life. So this is how you can make a difference to ours. You can contribute to this ministry by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or at our website, richardellistalks.com. We would be so grateful for your gifts. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
The great thing about this is God didn't send any leftovers down here. God came Himself, the Lamb slain before the foundation of the world. God sent a Lamb without spot or blemish, a perfect sacrifice who came and lived a perfect life, died on the cross, shed His blood, was buried and raised from the dead to purchase a place for me and for you in heaven. God gave Himself, He gave the best, so that we could have His best and be all He intended. And it starts now. You don't have to wait.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellistalks.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, there's a ton of great stuff there just for you. Things like all of the talks from Richard, a prayer wall where you can leave your prayer request, and a whole lot more. Check it out, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we love doing this program for you, but we're so grateful when you hop on board to help us with the cost. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website. It's easy and much appreciated. 855-6-RICHARD or richardellistalks.com. Until next time, God bless you, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.